Norbert!
Hiya, buddy. Hey! Doc says I should be on my beam and as good as new in a week.
And back on the force.
Norbert!
That's wonderful.
Whoa!
Come, friend. Everyone should have a friend like you.
I woke up this morning with the sun down, shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Greg Pampas on the board. SP Futures down 22, NASDAQ Futures down 97. Yesterday was kind of a strange day. We came out with a PPI number that wasn't quite as hot as predicted. And our economist friend Hal Snar says a lot of that was because they used some new formula for gasoline, which is all BS basically. Anyway, but the weird was, is with the horrible CPI number the day before, we're now higher than we were before the number came out. Even though we had a down day, we were up more yesterday than we were down the day before. So market is... interesting, as always. Kevin, how are you?
Good. Is that the market reacting to O.J. Simpson's death? O.J. Simpson's exodus to the great white Bronco in the sky.
Yeah, and I. But now they'll never find the murderer because he stopped looking for him.
Yeah, yeah. O.J. was the only one on the job. And
yep.
Damn, it's over.
I got to remember the Bronco chase vividly, like it was yesterday.
You know, that got like 95 million people watching it.
Well, it took so long. We were all watching the OEX pit.
Yeah, you back up 30 years for that. That was, you know, we didn't have the same kind of, you know, news saturation. In fact, that may have triggered the news saturation, although, you know, certainly it would have happened sooner or later anyway. But you know, the 24-hour day reporting on the OJ trial, all of those things. You know, O.J. Simpson was had a lot of cultural influence, for better and for worse.
Well, he was, I was just going through his stuff on Wikipedia, kind of reviewing my memory, and some of the stuff I didn't know, obviously, but for those that maybe never, you know, it was a long time ago and all those kinds of things, it's an amazing period piece in American history, this guy. I mean, it's to read the stuff from early life on to, you know, what happened later and going to jail and all that stuff. It is an incredible microcosm of what went on in those years to a lot of people. Okay, I mean, not the murder trial, but just the guy. And it brings up another name. He played at Kezar Stadium, and he made money scalping tickets there. Kezar Stadium, for those that don't know, it's the 49ers used to play there. And evidently, I mean, San Francisco being so hilly, there wasn't a whole lot of flat ground. So Kezar Stadium, I don't know if it started out as like a high school and then a small college. But high school played there, San Francisco Junior College played there, and the 49ers played there. And if you go by it now, it's back to being like high school size. Evidently, when it was Kezar.
It's Gately Stadium is what you're saying.
Yeah, and then it just got, they put all these, evidently, they must have been temporary stands of some kind because now they're down. You sit there and go by that meeting, they played pro ball there. But one of the guys who just, boy, it has to be a few years ago, Kevin, just got in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he played for the 49ers. The guy never played. He grew up like half a mile from Kezar Stadium. He played every single home, high school, college, and pro game at that park. Can you imagine? But I think it's over It's not near the wharf. It's, I don't know, somewhere. I went by it once, but Dr. J was driving. He knew the area. I didn't. But the dude, I mean, when you think of how these people grow up, these people, not just the fact that he was black, but just he grows up. His mother was, well, she did. She worked for something. And the old man worked for the Federal Reserve, of all places. And he was also a drag queen, the old man. And ended up saying he was gay and died of, what the hell he died from? AIDS in like 1986. He didn't know his name was Orenthal until he was in third grade. He thought his name was O.J.
Do you think his first name was O?
I don't know. I mean, they just, you know, I mean, I'm saying it's a different, you know, way of growing up. I mean, so he ends up going to high school. He was a pretty good football player in high school. All city. Went to Galileo High School. He had crummy grades, so he couldn't get into anywhere. And he didn't want to get drafted to Vietnam, so he goes to City College of San Francisco in 1965. He plays there a couple of years. Of course, he's a big star running back, and I think he never graduated there either. So he went right after his second year of football to run track at Southern Cal. And he was on one of the relay teams that set a world record at one point with the 4x110 relay. I don't know if they even have that one anymore. Is that the same as the 4x100 meter? I guess it is. It must be pretty close. 110 yards. So then he went to Southern Cal, and he only played there for 2 years. I'm going to guess he never graduated there. But his list of awards there, from the Heisman Trophy on down, I mean, it's really something. I mean, he lists awards. Again. I'm looking at him here. It was two times the unanimous All-American, two-time first-team All-Pac-10. The Trojans retired his number, NCAA All-American, Sports SN. Who's SN? Player of the Year, 1968, two times UPA.
Sporting News.
Two times UPA Player of the Year, Walter Camp Award, Maxwell Award, Heisman Trophy. So Heisman, you know, national champion. Wow. You know, I mean, National Football Hall of Fame. I mean, really an amazing career, but in football. But he also was one of the first guys. I mean, Jim Brown did it, but he was in, like, you know, black boy, what they used to call those things, black ex. There was a name for it. Sexploitation. They were blackploitation.
Oh, blaxploitation. Yeah. Shaft.
Yeah, it was like
with
Shaft and so
classic
forth.
Classic example.
And so he didn't want to do any of those. But the guy became a massive speaker for Hertz. You know, you don't have to run through airports, and they saw O.J. jumping over suitcases and stuff. Mm-hmm. He ended up, he raised, when he was doing those commercials, he raised their revenue, percentage of revenue, something like 40% or something. And he negotiated his deal right with the head of, but he was an absolute classic dude for anybody from a lower class background, and certainly any black person. He was an example of what you could make out of your life, even if you use athletics to get there, you could do stuff. Amazingly well spoken. The lady who we spent Stocks and Jocks, and my friend Robin, who died in a car crash earlier in the year, which still is bothering people from Stocks and Jocks. She was one, and when she was in Chicago, she was in that big, was it a Big Sister program, Kevin? Where everybody, you can kind of adopt somebody from a worse neighborhood and take them to the movies or show them places they wouldn't normally go. I think it was Big Sisters. I know there's Big Brothers. I think she was Big Sisters. Anyway, they had a big shindig at the Chicago Theater, and for all the big brothers and big sisters, and they all brought these kids in there, and, you know, 80% of them were black. And she said O.J. Simpson was the inspirational speaker. She goes, he was spectacular. Just spectacular. So every one of those kids, the fact that O.J. Simpson was talking to them, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I mean, it's not just, are we joking about, you know, the trial. It was an amazing downfall of somebody. You know, he had all kinds of problems with women in his life and who knows what else was going on. But the fact is, as a beacon of really anybody, any athlete or anybody, certainly from the black community, for most of his life, he was that guy. I mean, and he was so far away. I remember Rick Talender. You know, I think I was with him some night, Kevin. I don't know where the hell we were. And he, remember when something we did with the score or whatever, I don't know. But he was sitting there talking. Rick Talender was what he was, a DB, defensive back for Northwestern.
Yeah.
I think. And he was, you know, he was a good football player, obviously. He played the Big Ten, but I don't think he was anything special. I'm sure he'd tell you that. Well, somehow or another, Southern Cal is coming to play at Northwestern. And he goes, I got to play against O.J. Simpson? He goes, the dude, he He had a his head had was he was bigger than any of our linemen. He's a huge guy, faster. He goes, how the hell am I going to tackle that guy? I mean, he was you know, I'm saying, I'm not. It's an amazing American period piece story, both the rise and the fall. And you know, to this day, I don't know who the hell, whatever happened. I mean, I suspect he probably. But here's the kicker, Kevin. It got to the point in the trial where the trial became, I don't know, just about every white person thought the guy was stone cold guilty, and most black people did not. And I was in the OEX pit at the time, and we were same place we watched the Franco thing. And there's 350 people in the pit trading, not every minute, people, you know, but certainly at the opening and the close there were. And they were all, it was ringed by booths with all kind of people in them, and there were a lot of African-American brokers in the pit. I don't know if there were any real any traders. All the quote reporters, virtually all of them, were African-American. And a lot of people in the booths, you know, and the man on the phones and so forth. So I'm going to say there's a total of 500 people, 80 of which are black, something along those lines. And when the thing came out, every black person absolutely jumped up and was cheering, and every white person shaking their head going, how the hell did that happen? I mean, I'll never forget it to this day. Because I don't know how many people were in a spot where it just happened to be 500 people of mixed race when the thing came out. But it the difference in people's reaction to it, depending on whether you were black or white, was incredible. I mean, all the blacks thought about was how the system could railroad you, and the white people were like, the guy had to be stone cold guilty. And plus, they were so tired of all the crap that was going on in the courtroom. So to this day, I'm going to say 70% guilty, but I still can't say 100%. Then he goes. Then they sue him. Where was that guy supposed to get $33 million to pay these people, the family?
Well, he didn't, but he wrote a book. He earned money from that. You know, the If I Had Done It, I think it was something like that. It seems to me he had some other stuff that.
But they kept selling him. He couldn't spend any of the money. They kept expecting him to do stuff like that, and they put him on. He had to give his expenses to the court, or else they took the thing for the book where they give you an advance. The advance for the book. I mean, it would have been pretty hard for him to do much of anything. I mean, why would you? Kind of a thing. But he did, and then he ended up. With all the memory. The weird part is, they took all his memorabilia and sold it, right? They confiscated it all, the courts. And then he went to try and get it back, or somebody was selling it and he knew it was his, and he went to the place, and that's where he ended up in jail or something like that. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm saying that's his memorabilia that was taken from him was being sold, and then he kind of freaked out.
Well,
right?
Yeah, he did. So, you know, things I remember about O.J. Simpson. He was obviously an outstanding football player. And the first to cross 2,000 yards in a season, I believe
14 games,
14 game season. Yes. So that, you know, that made a difference too. And when he was playing and when he was done, he was an incredibly marketable guy. I mean, you look at his face, the winning smile, he had the whole package of what looks great on a camera, and a very outgoing and likable persona. Because I always like to say persona instead of personality, because we just don't know. You don't know what's going on in the background. The place where I first started to sour on him was when he was doing Monday Night Football.
I remember that a little bit, but not that much. Fill me in.
Yeah, it wasn't that long, but boy, he really came off as jealous of Walter Payton, who was the big star at the time in the NFL.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah,
and it was like, you know, it was just obvious that he was seething about the attention that Payton got. Well, it turns out that kind of jealousy was a big part of his life. It was a part of and it resulted in a number of domestic violence calls and ultimately in the reasoning behind the murder. That was O.J. Simpson, and that's almost the perfect example that you can find of you never know based on the public persona. Some people are just, they seem like the nicest, most charming people, And then you get into real life, and they're really bastards.
What was it? Was it because he was in Buffalo and didn't get as much airtime as Walter was getting in Chicago? Or was, because, I mean, you know, they work these people. I mean, when you talk about receivers, or receiver, when in football in those days, can you imagine? I just looked at this yesterday. I couldn't believe it here, Kevin. 1968, when they used to play, what, 10 games? I'm going to guess. 10 or 11? 11 at the most. 68?
Man, I can tell you. Go ahead, keep going, Tom.
Guess how many rushing attempts? I'm going to say 10 games.
10 games in rushing attempts?
Yeah.
250-ish.
383. What the hell, over?
Yeah, no kidding.
Averaging 4.9 yards a carry. So in 2 years, he carried the ball 674 times. That's incredible.
I'm looking at regular season standings. Actually, they were playing 14 games then.
14?
Still a lot, yeah.
I'm talking about Southern Cal.
Oh, Southern Cal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Famously, John McKay, when you got a big gun, fire it.
Oh, yeah. So who are the guys before him and after him? Was it Mike Garrett was before him, right?
Garrett would have been before him. The people that came along after him would have been Anthony Davis,
Charles White.
Marcus Allen.
Charles White, they claim, was the best because
Charlie White was really good. Yeah,
so he played three years.
I think he was after Marcus Allen.
Maybe because at 3 years at 300 carries, what did you have left for the pros? For God's sake, 300 carries in a year or 400? I can't even. No wonder these guys couldn't walk.
You know what? It does is it's a cumulative toll. So obviously, in his early, you know, he had a great career and. And let's see, how long did he play in the NFL?
I'm going to say 11 years, but I'm not positive.
But you know that it's going to shorten the end of your career. It's not going to shorten your first season there or your second season there. Now, if you're weakened, you might be more susceptible to injury. That's why I really never blame guys for leaving school early and going. You might say, well, you stick around, you might be a higher draft pick. I said, yeah, but, you know, it's not like when I stay in school, I get to tack on a year at the end of my career after staying in school. You get in, you get your earnings, you get to your second contract, that's where the money's to be made.
But it's really rare in college for anybody to carry the ball more than 20 times in a game. No.
Oh, yeah. Well, in college and pros, as it gets to it now, because everybody's doing running back by committee, they've figured out that a great running back is a wonderful thing to have, but they aren't so much greater than the others that, yeah. A, they aren't worth the money compared to, say, a left tackle or a quarterback where you get guys that really are way better than everybody else, and when you get them, they're gold. And, you know, part two of that is they're probably more susceptible to injuries than anybody. So everybody plays running back by committee now. You play 2-3 guys routinely, and it doesn't matter whether you're college or professional.
Well, my cousin, who's, you know, he's up there
it's,
now.
It's also, by the way, is my brother John, who was a high school assistant coach, used to say it's the easiest position to learn.
Probably.
Well, here's the ball, go there.
My cousin played for University of Colorado, and he was not a big guy. He was real fast, but not a big guy. And he would tell me that, you know, and he would carry the ball, you know, probably 30 times a game. And he said, you know, if you go around and somebody missed a block and there's three guys waiting for you, he says, you go down. I mean, you get some yards. He said, but you got about 10 times a game where you can just challenge a guy and pile into him, trying to get by him or something. You can't do that every play if there's three people. He goes, you'll have nothing left by the fourth quarter. These guys, when you're carrying about 30 times, those guys knew how to pace themselves a little bit. Now, if you're a fullback going up the middle, I don't know how you pace yourself because guys are banging off you. But then again, how long did those guys last? Brockington, Earl Campbell, those people, what, 3-4 years at best?
Well, they lasted longer than that. Brockington probably burned out faster than Campbell. But Campbell, you know, was a 8-10 year. You know, I should have the.
Well, Brockington was the first guy ever to get 1,000 yards his first 2 years. So they were giving the ball like every play up in Green Bay, right? So it was anyway, Kevin. I just thought it's an amazing. You know, he had rickets as a kid. He had his legs were in iron. How do you How do you have a vitamin D deficiency that bad? I mean, what, you never was outside and never ate anything with vitamin D? Probably not. I mean, people don't even know what that disease is.
I don't know what to tell you, because that was back in the days when kids used to play outside.
So. Yeah, kind of strange stuff. Anyway, so what do you make of, I mean, we had the market doing what it was doing. We got gold going up. I've never seen anything really quite like this, Kevin, with this, I mean, this relentless stuff in this CPI. I don't know. If these guys don't do something, and I don't see them doing something in a, when I say these guys, the Fed, I don't see them doing something in a election year. And I don't think they're necessarily doing it, but other people around the world are, and money is just entering the system. I'm actually thinking about splitting Bitcoin. Do you believe that?
Yeah, it's such an asset. It's such a stock.
Yeah.
You might as well treat it 100% like a stock.
I'm going to tell you that there's all kinds of people. I mean, I told you the other day, I just happened to see somebody, not a PTI client or would never say anything, but I saw somebody asked me about somebody's portfolio. And I didn't look at the name, nor do I care. But I get the feeling it was an older lady. 25% of it was in Nvidia, Apple. I could tell she watched CNBC all day. You know, and those have been good, you know, good investments. But I listened to Cramer last night for like a minute. And all he's doing is talking about how people don't trust the guy who runs Nvidia, and it's the most horrible thing. He's the greatest chairman ever to walk, and how you have to trust the stock like forever. I'm going, how do you give that kind of investment advice, and then all of a sudden, if something falls apart, you don't have any qualms about it? I mean, I don't do it.
Not only that, you won't cop to it either.
No, but I mean, I don't do it.
He says, "Yeah, I knew that was bad all along."
But I don't give investment advice because I can't, because I'm registered. He isn't, but I still wouldn't do it anyway. I mean, for some people, some clients who want to be a little more aggressive and have the ability to do so at the right size, should they be in Nvidia if they are convinced that the, you know, this AI thing is forever? I don't understand, Kevin. Not that I don't know anything near much about AI as you do. And
I've been sitting in sessions about it the last couple of days.
But my point is, this to me, how do you not realize that as a push to your investment stuff, the word is AI has said every minute on damn near on national TV. It's exactly like cloud was 4 years ago, and exactly like China was 8 years ago. They weren't involved in China. Ah, he's in China. They're in China. China. Oh, God, the company's in China. And then it was the cloud. Now those never even get mentioned. This is the new thing where if a company says, and I think there's going to be huge advancements here listening to you and from Carl, but the idea that just because somebody mentions some company might be in AI and I'm going to go buy it, the thought of that never even crossed my mind. I mean,
it's data analytics at the speed of computers.
Yeah, well, that's
probably the best way to put it. But you know, the point is, and you bring up cloud a lot. Cloud's just, you know, it's run through a product life cycle. It was a hot growth. The growth part of the life cycle was about 10% of what most products have to getting to be a mature product, and you know, then it's. You know, then it's just commodity. It's commodity now, so that's kind of normal.
Well, S&P futures down 18.
But what they don't tell you that in when they talk about it on the shows, they talk about it as, you know, it's like it's the hottest thing, it's the new biggest thing. Well, yeah, it grew, it got profitable for a lot of people. It's, you know, but the growth season for it is over, and I think that's. You know, understanding life cycles would seem to me to be part of understanding investments.
Well, one would think. S&P futures down 18, NASDAQ futures down 96. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year. At luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Low and Rumpere, Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow, Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 95. Except for a big day up yesterday. We had a pretty interesting glitch yesterday in Morgan Stanley. They came out and evidently supposed to be some kind of investigation on those guys. And kind of sent the market down a little bit on the close. One of the things. Now, this morning, we've got J.P. Morgan earnings came out. And they're just, you know, they beat on more trading than they said. And then not as many write-offs. The stock's down 344, so I don't know if we're going to go through one of those earnings seasons where if you come up with good stuff and stocks are down, we'll see. The banks are kind of kicking that off. I'll get you Wells Fargo in a little bit. Dow futures down 111 over in Europe. We've got the they're all higher because we were higher yesterday after they closed. DAX up 137.8%, FTSE up 88.1%, CAC round up 57.7%. So pretty much broadly across the board they're rallying. Nikkei up 80.2%. That's been a slow day for those guys. Hang Seng was going up. Now today, down 373, over 2%. China exports were down, but Shanghai's only down 14 bucks or 0.5%. It's almost like the mainland stocks don't even... Hang Seng tells you kind of what's going on in China. It's sort of bizarre. Yesterday, actually, the Dow was down 2. But the S&Ps were up 38, and NASDAQ up 271. It was a huge day for the NASDAQ. Bonds, now 5 basis points, but still over 4.5 in the 10-year, 4.53. The Bund down 10, 2.37. Japan unchanged, 0.85. But that's as high as Japan has been in literally years. Oil up 92 cents, 85.94. Still, we're not getting any break from these oil price increases. Brent up 86 cents, 90.60. Natural gas unchanged, 175. RBOB up 3 cents, up to 280. Gold, again, up 36 bucks, 24.09. I waited years for this thing to get past 2,000. Now it's going to up 400 points, 20% in probably 3 months. It's unreal. Silver up 80 cents, 29.05. It's over. Good thing we're long all this stuff. That's a good thing. Copper up 7 cents, 432. We've got the U.S. dollar. It's strong. Euro's down to 106. British pound to 124, so the dollar is real strong. Crypto up 478, 70,823. A lot of stuff there, Greg. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, everyone. 634 here in Chicago. We've got 50 degrees right now. Some rain and wind this morning. Hopefully sun later. High of 59 today here. Phoenix, 67 now. Mostly sunny with a high of 93 today there. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 15 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 30 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 21 minutes. Ryan from 95th is 22 minutes. And same thing for the Stevenson, 294 to the Ryan. That's 22 minutes. NBA Bulls win. They beat the Pistons in Detroit. That was 127 to 105.
How bad are they, the Pistons?
They've been better.
Yeah.
NHL Hawks and Predators play tonight at UC. Coyotes and Oilers at 8. And golf, we had the Masters was delayed in the beginning, and then not everybody finished their round. DeChambeau leads, I believe, with a 65, and then Scheffler is minus 6 and Hogarth's minus 5. They start in a couple hours.
Start like right now if you're one of the guys who has to finish.
If they have to finish, yeah.
Tiger is one of those guys, so he's got to play. He's got to play what 25 holes today. Good luck with that. He was hurting yesterday.
Yeah. So I got Chief.
Back so Kevin, one last little word here on the. Now we have to have this huge. Playoff system to make everybody play like 100 games in college. Just so happened when O.J. played in the 1978 Rose Bowl. Kevin, I know I must have watched this, but it just so happened number 2 USC faced top-ranked Ohio State. So it was a 1-2 on New Year's Day. O.J. ran for 171 yards, including an 80-yard touchdown run, but they lost 27-16. How good was Ohio State, for God's sake?
Yeah, it was the rare occasion in those days of the Big Ten winning the Rose Bowl.
And he, when he won the Heisman, it was the largest margin of victory for 51 years. He beat Leroy Keyes by 1,750 points. Wasn't Leroy Keyes like the last official full-game two-way player? I think he was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. A DB and a halfback.
Yeah.
Played for Purdue, for those who don't know.
Yeah. He didn't have much of a pro career, I don't believe.
Not really. Not really.
Neither did Quinn Buckner. He wouldn't play basketball.
Well, hey, Quinn Buckner had the fatal flaw for anybody who wants to be a guard in the NBA. Quinn Buckner did play a long time in the NBA, but he was more of a role player.
Yeah.
You have to have a great outside shot if you're going to be in the NBA and play guard.
Some guys didn't. Norm Van Leer didn't, but most guys had to. I mean, unless you were a full, just a dish or offer kind of guy, you had to be on the right team. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, you did, and you know, it seems to me Buckner even, if I remember correctly, even played for the Celtics for a while, so he was on the right team.
Yeah. Well, I watched him play at Indiana. He was a huge star here. He was from Thornton, wasn't he? Thornton Fraction.
Thornridge.
Yeah. It wasn't the same school as Lou Boudreau. Boudreau and those guys went to Thornton, I think. I'm not sure.
South Side, I don't know.
South Suburbs,
I don't
know
about him, but yeah, I remember because Quinn Buckner was my age. So,
I saw him play football in Indiana. We went down there for a game, and then I saw him play basketball like about 3 weeks later, and his football weight had to be 25 pounds heavier than his basketball weight. He was slow on the basketball court for a while until he got into basketball shape. There's a difference,
mm-hmm.
A big difference. So Kevin, what's going on with the schools?
Before you jump off of that, because I just pulled it up. So you know, Buckner was he had good shooting percentages, career 46.1, which is good for a guard. Even when his first 3 years they didn't have 3-point shots. But even then, he was only taking 0.1 per game. So he didn't have the range that the other guards had, and that was his issue. Tough defender, good taking the ball to the basket, and that's it. So now let's do a quick look at Van Leer and see what he looked like. And he was, you know, clearly before 3-point shooting. When you say Norman Van Leer, see, he wasn't nearly as good as Buckner. He was a career 41% shooter. From the field. So again, point guard, drove, other people can take the shots. But as you look at it, as good a player as Norm Van Leer was, 41% is from the field is nothing.
But he was great on D, and he got the ball to everybody else. Not just get the ball to other people, get the ball to people where they wanted it, at the time where they were in motion for their shot.
Yeah, putting it in the right, it's not just getting it to the right guy, but... It's getting it to him where he can catch and shoot, and I think that's the biggest deal.
That's a big part of basketball.
Just for
grins,
now I hit Oscar Robertson, who despite tailing off at the end of his career, was a career 48.5% shooter, and in his better seasons he was over 50%. That's outstanding for a guard. I mean, clear, you know, guards drove to the basket more than they do now, which gives you a higher percentage shot, but still. Most guards have to be shooters, and if you can shoot 50% for a season, you're pretty darn good.
There are people, especially older people in basketball, older than me, that saw him play more, that would say he was at least as good as Michael Jordan. He's played
well in many ways. He was the guy who averaged a triple double for the whole season.
Yeah,
which is just awesome. My early memories of him, you know, really are centered more around the Bucks. When late in his career, when they had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and they had Bobby Dandridge, but they never quite had enough to be an NBA champion. They went out and got Oscar Robertson as an old guy just to be the third weapon, and you know he was a difference for them, and he could still score. He was 19, 17, 15 in his time with the Bucks, and then tapered off after that.
Well, it's those guys played. It's hard to compare people. I mean, from eras and so forth. I mean, I always thought that The reason why you could compare Wilt to people was Wilt was the secretariat of basketball players. I mean, the gene pool, there's never been another athlete like Wilt anywhere. I mean, there's people that are better in maybe an individual sport. Talk about swimmers and so forth, but the dude was what? When he stopped playing basketball, he was a volleyball star for you. I mean, he ran track, he did high jumping. There was nothing the guy couldn't do. And
guys don't do that as much anymore. No. You know, they start specializing in high school, although occasionally you will get the one that where, you know, this guy was, you know, Kyler Murray, the quarterback at Phoenix was going to be out. He may have been. I don't remember if he signed with the Cardinals, or I said Phoenix, Arizona. I don't know if he signed with the Cardinals before the MLB draft or afterwards, but he was considered to be a guy who was probably going to go play baseball because he'd be a first-round draft pick as an outfielder. There are those guys around still who are multi-sport guys, but how many do we know? You go back to when we were in school, Tom Clements had, you know, his decision of where he wanted to attend school was either play quarterback for Notre Dame or play point guard for North Carolina.
Well, yeah, but I was reading this thing about it was a big to do in one of the Quora Digest things about who was better, Shaq or Wilt. And, you know, Shaq was a huge man. He was terrific. But the man played 32 minutes a game, and Wilt played 48. Well, duh. This discussion should stop right there. What happens in 16 minutes when Shaq's on the bench? Right? Those
well,
guys.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have to, you know, what was his effect on the game? But yeah, if we look at Shaq, well, he was later in his career. Yeah, he was 30 and under for his final years. He actually did play quite a bit early, 37, 39, et cetera, 40 in about his seventh or eighth season when he was with the Lakers. But after that, he tapered off, and so that's something that you would have to consider in there. And if we look at Chamberlain. Basketball Reference is such an easy to use site. If we look at Chamberlain, he was going 46, 47, 48, 47, 46. Yeah. His last year, which was, let me count the seasons here, 6-5, 15 seasons. His last year, he played 43 minutes a game.
Well, the one year he played more than the amount of minutes because of the overtime games, right?
48.5 is third year when in a 48-minute game.
That's interesting. So Kevin, what do you from the outside? Let's talk Middle America markets here a little bit, which you are my source.
Well, speaking of Middle America, before you do that, I do have to make one observation that I didn't think I would see the day, but I'm at this conference and there are thousands of people here, and then I'm at this resort and there are many more people here, and I have not seen one person wearing a mask.
Really?
That's a first, because there's always a handful of people that seem to have magic masks that prevent disease, and they wear them. But I have not seen one. I'm
last
so proud.
Few times I've seen.
I'm so proud of Hoosier America.
The last few times I've seen one, it's somebody who actually has this nasty cold that's running around and doesn't want to give it to somebody else.
Well, I get that. You don't want to sneeze and spew and all that. Well, not that it's going to do that much, but I always laugh when I see them, and my first thought is, boy, that's magic, huh? It's it's going to stop everything.
Oh yeah.
So that's my observation. Hoosiers have figured it out.
Well, what do you make of? I mean, just in terms of people's, I don't want to go through those numbers I went through from the '80s. Even though they keep haunting me. We had a real long period of time in the market where nobody ever wanted to be in the market. Interest rates were high. Market never moved. You were a blithering idiot if you were in the market. There's no question that was the whole mantra from really 1968 to 1982. There's no... Normally, everything you say, there's a debate about. There was no debate. Everybody was in. People, if you didn't have 95% of your money in a CD at 15%, you were an idiot if you had it in the market, right? Because the market didn't do anything. But some of the stocks paid decent dividend. I'm not talking about You're an idiot. There were a lot of people who had...
Yeah, I was an idiot for different reasons, for example.
No, but I'm saying there were people who had AT&T stock that paid a good dividend. There were people that were in the market. You know, if you work for places, or some people were in the dividend reinvestment programs, those kinds of things. So, but I'm saying in general, if somebody gave you 50 grand in 1980, you probably walk right down to the bank and got 15% for it. You didn't call your mutual fund guy. But some people might have, but very few. And we went absolutely the other way around, where me, as somebody who does investment stuff for people, I mean, that's my job, it was even very difficult for me, even if somebody was, older, not working, retired, you don't necessarily have to be older and retired, not working, all the same person, but you can be. It was really hard for me to say, give me your $1 million, by the way, I'm going to put it in a 10-year bill for 1.5%. Yeah, you can't do that, Kevin. I mean, when markets are going up, and all of a sudden it became, people went, I use the investment term, people went further out on the risk curve than they normally would have been. Just like in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, you didn't want to be any part of the risk curve because the risk-free curve was 15%. There was no reason to try and pick the right stock when you were getting 15% for nothing. Now, granted, inflation was 12 or 11, so you weren't gaining that much, but at least you were staying ahead.
But you weren't getting 15 out of the market.
Right. Oh, well, no, absolutely not. But it became such a knee. I used to ask my uncle, who's kind of a knucklehead. I go, "Hey, Uncle Dan, you ever gonna buy any stock?" Because he had some money. And he goes, "Last time I bought stock, I bought Northern Tissue in '29. I got wiped out." I'm like, come on. But I mean, there was zero thought of anybody, many middle class America, going and buying stock. Now he worked for Western Electric, so he had some AT&T stocks. It wasn't like he didn't have any. But, it just, the thought wasn't even on your mind. All it did was go down. And even when rates started to go down, the stock market was going down right with it. You would think it would have gone up, but it didn't. Now we're the other side of the coin. I don't know what it would take if you were to tell people the market is going to go down 40% next week, and you came back from the future and you knew it. They wouldn't believe you, Kevin. I mean, the question is, how far now? We've seen this 10-year ramp. And I'm not saying at 4.5% anybody should run out and dump all their stocks. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that for my people. But I'm keeping people more protected, okay? And in the industry word, instead of being 100 deltas, we're probably down to 60. So in other words, I'm having an Armageddon put for people, or I'm doing something like that, where if we do have a sudden move. But every time I go through this, I keep thinking of your words. Gradually, then all of a sudden.
Yeah, gradually, then suddenly, you bet.
I mean, and we see this 10-year... it's 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, now it's 4.6. When is somebody going to say, and I don't think 4.6 is a time to panic at all, but I'm concerned about the trend. And now what if it's 3 weeks from now we're having this conversation, it's 5.2 or it's 5.3? Somewhere, someplace, people are going to look at it and go, well, wait a minute. These stocks aren't paying anywhere near that kind of dividend. They're not. It looks to me like if you start putting a discount factor of 6% on future earnings, some of these stocks are pretty high. Not all. So, I think there's probably some good buys. But when it's not like people have the mentality to do this every day. It's, no, we've done this for 12 years. It's worked. Now we're going to keep doing it no matter what. Same thing, I think, is sort of happening this time. I will say this. If that number got to 8, I would be very surprised the market looks like this. I don't think it's going to get to 8. But I don't know that this inflation stays at the CPI, the unadjusted numbers were 0.6 2 months in a row. The adjusted numbers were 0.4 2 months in a row. So multiply either one of those times 12. You're somewhere between 4.8 and 7.2. That's a lot.
And all the while remembering that the denominator is way higher than it used to be.
Yes. And that's why, I was, I don't know if you were listening to it, I was listening to some lady on CNBC doing the argument that the economy is in spectacular shape. And I don't know what part of mathematics.
The only growth in the economy to speak of, I mean, there's some in, in small sectors, but the macro growth in the economy is all fueled by government spending.
Sure it is. But her point was, and this is how There's a piece of mathematics. There's a name for this, and I of course don't know. I bet Professor Hale knows. There's a piece of mathematics that says she was talking about people at the lower end of the spectrum in terms of wages, not in terms of being people, but in terms of wages, are all up 20-30% in the last 4 years. So they're more than making up for inflation. And I sit there and go, well, wait a minute. She didn't just really say that, did she? And if you go back 25 years, the people at the lower end, giving the part that stuff was going overseas, went like almost two decades without a raise. So now you're saying that somebody was making 10, and now he or she is making 13.50, and somehow they've gained on the deal when the price of the car is up 20 and the price of a house is up 190. I mean, what are you talking about? $10. For those that don't know, there's 2,080 hours in a year, right, Kevin? So when somebody's making $10 an hour, it's a little over 20,000. And now if you're making 14, you're talking 28,000. Mm-hmm. That doesn't begin to, like you say about the denominator, and there's a math word for that. That doesn't begin, that $8,000 cover you on a car that now went from 25 to 50. I mean, you're not even the same planet, are you?
No. And that's why, you know, I don't know, you know, when I say they have a lack of empathy, it's because, it may be because they're just people who are not empathetic, which could very well be, but I think it's this disconnect from the real world that means when people do this kind of reporting, when they set policies, when they do all of the things that, you know, this upper class does, or it's not even management class, it's the snob class, I don't know what else to call it, that, you know, with everything they do, there's just no empathy for average people. There's no understanding of average people because they don't live around average people. It's, you know, it's like that time back when Reagan won by a landslide and took darn near every state, and there was a famous quote from somebody working in one of the newsrooms and going, how did this happen? I don't know anybody who voted for him.
Yeah.
You know, duh.
Well, I mean, but you wonder, you don't under, I guess you don't, unless you go through the numbers, Kevin, I don't necessarily think that it's if in lack of empathy, but in our day, if you got, quote, a job, meaning a union job or something. When we all know that if you were a teacher at St. John Fisher, that wasn't enough to take care of a family. That was
right.
It was
usually a second income.
It was a second income from usually, well, I don't know of any guy. It was a lady who walked to work with her school, or her kids walked to work, school, same thing. And they didn't need a second car, anything like that. So it was, and she was home for lunch with the kids. So it covered many bases, not just the teaching and the salary part. But if you were to get a job at Pullman, say, or at anywhere in the United Auto Workers, and all of a sudden you're making 18, 20 bucks, 16 bucks an hour in 1978, you were pretty much covered. I mean, you could get the house, the car, not the best, not a Cadillac, and not the best house. You could live with, quote, a job. Mm-hmm. And I think people who are in the higher echelons and make a lot of money don't notice the shift, and it's a mathematical shift, that most of the people now who are, quote, I won't say poor, but are having trouble making ends meet, are working, maybe not even one job, but two. And I think there's not an appreciation for that being the situation today. Is that a better way to say it?
I think, yeah, and, you know, it's, like I said, I don't want, you know, we usually think of lack of empathy as a real pejorative thing, like a bad person lacks empathy, and there certainly are some bad people that, you know, at that level that lack empathy, but there's just people who are disconnected. The ones who, you know, grew up, they were always going to college. In fact, they were always going to really fine colleges, and you know, there was never any, you know, there was never any other expectation, and their life has been engineered all around, you know, being among the elites. You know, it's pretty hard to relate to the common man, but you know, there's I think it was Henry the Fourth, the Shakespeare play Henry the Fourth, and
I always get my Henrys mixed up.
Yeah, you get your Henrys all mixed up, but you have your young Prince Hal, who who is hanging out with Falstaff. And Falstaff was sort of like the Norm Peterson of Shakespeare's era. And so, as you can imagine, all of the people in the castle were, you know, disapproved of this relationship of him, you know, just going out, because Falstaff was at, you know, he was at the bars. It was like the prince with hanging out at chairs. And everybody disapproved. But it turns out that Falstaff had the, you know, he was like the perfect executive coach for the prince, because what he taught him is that if you want to lead people, you have to enter their world. Doesn't mean you're of that world. It doesn't mean you are that world. But it just means you have to be able to get in there and relate. And that's where we break down. We break down from the political class. We break down from the media class. All of those. They have no feeling for the world where most people live.
Well, you don't, unless it's you or happens to someone in your family or somebody you know. I mean, you know, somebody who works, since I go there every Sunday morning, somebody who works at Myers. Okay, let's say they're a cashier, and now they're down to 35 hours or 36 or something. So I think, from what the guy tells me, they're about, and he's been there a while. I think we're at the 1750, 1850 range, somewhere in there. So let's say it's 20. All right, so you work your 35 hours, you're talking $700. And I know from people that have had issues, and I've had them in my place, it's real easy. They have a plumbing problem and have a guy over on a Friday afternoon and the bill be $550. So let me get this straight. I work, you know, the stuff does not match up, Kevin. And Lou was talking about how much it costs to get his scrape on the side of his car. Body shop guys are charging $1.50 an hour. Okay, so I'm making, you know, 20, say, at Myers. I put in my 35 hours and all of a sudden I'm up to $700. This guy works, what, half a day on my car and we're even? I mean, it's the spread is dramatic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just went through this with, and this, you were talking about the, I forget what you called the term was for the inflation rate for services. I had to replace the softener at my home. And, you know, I had the chance. He said, you know, you can get this no-salt system that does all the water treatment. I said, well, how often am I going to have to maintain that? And he said, nah, you're probably good for 10 years. And I said, well, I'll be gone by then. At any rate, you know, it's like you get to a certain point and you say, oh, hell, just go ahead and spend the extra $800. I'm getting, you know, it's costing me a fortune anyway. Do it. And I'm glad I can do that, but most people can't. Most people are going to get that, and they're going to say, I'm going with hard water. Going to get the original price, and they're going to say, I'm going with hard water.
I'm going to break the salt in.
I'm not even talking about that. They're going to say, forget it. You know, just take out the water softener. Just bypass it, because I can't afford to replace that. And then you get people, like in Lou's situation, where they're saying the door was scraped, and they're going to say, okay, I'll drive it that way. I can't afford it.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of that going on.
Well, there's a lot of that going on in the healthcare, for sure. Well, unfortunately. So how come Flanagan didn't come up with a name like Supercore? It could have been us.
We rely on him for the naming conventions around here, don't we?
Yeah, you know what? Nobody even knew what that meant. Yesterday it was like the most Googled thing.
Oh, and yes, yeah. I knew it. I knew that, yes.
Yeah, I knew that. Let me try to figure out what the hell it was. For those that don't know, the super core inflation is the regular core, which means energy and food taken out. Then you take out housing as well. Now, why that means super core, I have no idea, but somebody thought up the name, and that's all anybody's talking about in one day. It's now, we got to do that, Kevin. What's about Greg? Why can't he come up with something like that? He's supposed to be our high-end producer, for God's sake.
Yeah. Damn it, Greg.
Greg,
what's going on here?
Anyway, Kevin, we'll talk at you soon. SP Futures down 14, NASDAQ Futures down 72. Be right back. Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, my friends. Tyson Jackson. I'm out. Great Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 13. The S&P is down 16. Now we're creeping back up here, as we seemingly always do. Do we have the professor, Carl? Carl, are you with us? Sometimes Carl mutes himself.
Hold on just a minute here, Chief.
Oh, there you go. Oh, he spilled coffee on himself. That would not be good. Hope he's not like the lady from McDonald's. Ugh, don't even want to think that. Anyway, the market is... We have gold is interesting. Gold's up another $40 here. We have the GDX, which is starting to creep up a little bit, is up 58 cents. But some of the gold... We had a lot of clients in this GOLD, which is Barrick Gold. The thing could not get over $16 ever. I had people buying the 16 call options. They never were anything. All of a sudden, the thing went from 16 to 18, 28 now in like 2 weeks. And, of course, people are so tired of buying them, they don't have them, which is typical. When you're early, you get disgusted about stuff, and that's the way that works out. Hey, Greg, while we're waiting for Carl, what's the status? Are we going to, Monday, we're going to talk more about your the website that you're adding to Stocks and Jacks. Is there any progress this week?
Yeah, we've got our option... calculator, it's pretty much ready, and you need a login on the website. So if you click login and sign up, you can test it out and be part of our beta group, which is a way to really kind of plan out your strategy and take advantage, say, of the leverage that options provide.
Well, we're talking about no uncovered calls. We're talking about no defined risk strategies. Correct.
I believe the default right now is no undefined.
Right.
So if you put in you want a credit, then definitely you'll get a vertical. But if you do debits, those are all defined also.
Right. Is that Carl we heard?
You did.
Oh, bingo.
He's there. Hopefully you didn't splash any coffee where you didn't want it.
No, it's my system's being a little strange here. I think... Well, it has to do with some problems I've been having with my microphone. I have a lav that has it's a Sennheiser unit, which is wireless.
Sounds great.
Sounds fine right now.
They're very high quality. But the problem is that I've been having some problems with it, and I bought it back when I used to do a lot of political reporting and stuff like that, where I was, I had to mic somebody up because he was going to be, 50, 60, 100 feet away from me while I was shooting him. And that kind of equipment is god-awful expensive.
Oh, yeah. If you want it a little bit, but 10% more in quality is like 50% more in price, right?
At least. One pair of these units is well north of $500. Okay, so just to give you an idea.
Well, I mean, the studio, even the studio mics that we use here, and, we're in PTI's offices, so they'll look like these are all, otherwise you could never have somebody across the way from you on the show with you if you don't have these directional mics. Otherwise, the mic would pick up everything the other person said. You don't want any of that.
Well, exactly, and it's a cardioid pattern, and they're very nice. They're wonderful. They're very expensive. I bought them back when I was, I was doing that kind of thing as my gig, and now I've got problems with them, in that every now and then they start showing up with all kinds of static in them, and it's very odd static. I haven't been able to trace down exactly what's going on. So
what do you do? Smack it? Shake it? Do something?
Yeah, kind of. There's something. I'm afraid it's just dying from old age.
Well, that happens.
Well, and that's bad because I don't happen to have another one of them laying around. And then to make it worse, the specific models that I have were obsolesced by the digital TV transition. And so you can't buy them even on the secondary market from people because they're illegal to sell. They're legal to use in one specific guard band, which you can set. You have to manually program them to be in there so you don't interfere with people's television. But they can't sell them because the defaults and where you can set them will stomp on frequencies that have been repurposed and given to someone else.
Oh, yeah. There's some of that gone. We have a lot of equipment here we can't use.
Well, that's, this is one of those things that, this is, poor mouth complaining to some extent because the guys that do this all the time, they're like, well, that stuff's 15 years old. I'll trash it and, buy new in a different band and all's fine. What about the guy like me that, doesn't do it all the time? And, I use it now primarily as a podcasting mic and of course for things like this because it's the quality is fabulous and I refuse to go out and blow $1,000 on another setup.
Well, yeah. So, all the stuff we've been kicking around this week and these crazy numbers that came out and we're seeing this relentless creep, and which is fine for me, because I've had people in this gold stuff for a long time and finally I'm getting some kind of reward. I think I was way too early, though, Carl. But still, the way we trade, we had individual times where we had protective puts on things, and when it went way down, we were actually able to make some money on the puts. So even with the things jumping around where it didn't really go the way we wanted to, I think we were still positive. But now that it's moving up, I mean, we're doubling up, and it's working out fine for us. But you're seeing this 10-year creeping, the gold creeping, to a certain extent, Bitcoin's creeping, the market's creeping somewhere. Where, and yet I'm looking at money supply numbers and things like that, I don't know that it's, the Fed is clearly not fighting the inflation as much as they say they are. But I'm getting the feeling that it feels like money's entering the system, and yet I'm not so sure our guys are doing it. Is it just the rest of the world doing it, and it's just percolating over? I mean, you're not, the way everything is behaving, these prices, I would be betting the money supply was going up 8%. Yet, unless they're really lying on M2, which I don't think they're doing, M2 has been flat for the last 6 months. It's not obvious where it's coming from, but it's coming from someplace. Is it the wealth effect? That when stuff goes up, people's got more money to spend, or what?
Well, remember, people don't have money to spend until they cash it out. Okay, I mean, a number on a... Well, a number on a statement... simply gives you the comfort to blow a greater percentage of whatever you take in today.
You have buying power.
Same way in your house.
If your house goes up, you can borrow against it.
I understand that, but you haven't. Well, it's buying power, but it isn't spendable cash. And if you do that, then what you've done is add to your leverage. Which, it's the old inflation problem with the curve that I have put out dozens of times over the years, which is that all of this feels really good when it starts. And yet, inevitably, you get behind this curve, and when that happens, you get it in the backside. So, how far does this go before it becomes... before the weight, so to speak, overpowers you? The CPI, to me, was rather interesting because you've got distortions in the system right now that until they get changed, I don't see how you're going to solve the basic problem. Right? I mean, you look at, for example, auto and homeowners insurance, which most people are seeing 20% or better increases this year.
Right? Actually, that CPI is, has it at 22.
Well, that's but I mean, yeah. But think of that's something you actually have to legally have to buy, or you're not driving. All right, and then you take a look at the at the insanity with with new and used car prices, and and the market distortions that are in there right now, and what that means in terms of because that's a before insurance price, right? Then of course you have to buy the insurance, and people thought that all these doodads and all this fancy stuff had no consequence. Well, I have a friend of mine who's a body man, and headlights $2,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, this is a serious issue, because, somebody smacks you in the parking lot, it's a $2,000.
That's one of the.
It's $2,000.
Other than the fact that once you drive one, you don't ever really want to go back to something small. And I've always had trucks for the last however many years, and the reason why I have, Carlos, I can change the headlight. Audrey's Cadillac, I take the bumper off. I don't want to do that.
Well, yeah.
Who designs stuff like that? I mean, what's the point?
Well, my Suburban's an 02, okay? I can literally take the entire headlight assembly out of the truck in about 15 seconds.
Yeah, it's two screws. It's not even
it's two pins.
Yeah, it's two pins.
And then underneath that is the turn signal and drive and DRLs, and that again is a replaceable lens that you can buy for about $50.
I just did that for my new truck. $50 exactly for the both of them.
Right, and because those things get nasty, and okay, you can sit there and buff them and whatever, but for $50, I'll just buy a set. Right,
yeah,
I don't care. Right, they're brand new. They're nice and shiny. They look great. And the thing is, it's like, okay, so, somebody hits that thing in the parking lot and dents the bumper. Well, I could buy the bracket for, that got bent for about $50. And have a body guy pull it back out. Is it a perfect repair? No, but it's awfully darn close. And again, I'm into this for $100. All right, so the insurance company doesn't get called. All right. Now do that in a modern vehicle, and that piece and this piece is. However, the headlights $2,000.
Yeah.
Well, now the insurance company does get.
Yeah, man. It's the first time I've ever had a little bit of sympathy for an insurance company. Not only that, they're so booked up they got to give you a loaner for like 6 weeks.
Well, I have a very good friend of mine has a pretty new Ram truck that he bought. I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, and he tagged a deer. At night. Not a lot you can do about that, right? Those effing things jump out in front of your vehicle, and he hit it. Well, his truck was in the shop waiting for the parts for a month. Okay? Now, it wasn't that...
We're talking about Dodge Ram. We're talking about a regular pickup. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, you're talking about a regular pickup. 6 months... You'd think. I mean, I think 6 months old. It took it was off the road for a month, and he's driving around in a Mazda rental. All right, and of course he's not real happy about this because he really likes his truck. But I have no clue what the insurance company ended up paying for that. That's clearly, it's a collision claim, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know how you avoid that one. Those kind, those freaking walking rats are.
Well, plus they're so full now. If you have any body work, you used to walk in and they'd say, "By the way, who's paying for it?" And if you say you were, if you were an upright looking person, they give it to you for less. Then they'd stick the insurance company. Now they don't even care. You're the same number as the insurance company because they're so full.
Well, this is so, people wonder where this problem's coming from. Well, it's coming from there, okay? And in all of this, these are really nice LED headlights. Oh, they're beautiful. They're nice and white and on it. Yeah, okay. Wait till you smack one and have to go buy another one. All right. I mean, it's just, and the thing is, those kinds of events, insurance is a pooled risk thing, okay? And as I've pointed out many times on the show and in some of my articles and stuff, an insurance company, because they're state regulated, is typically only allowed to make a 10% margin. and they have to put their rates to the state regulators. So if you know if they're making more than that, the state tells them to go stick it the next time they come around, and you know, the next year. And as a result, the only way they can make more money is to either have more claims or more expensive claims. That's it.
No, you can give the chairman a big raise because that becomes an expense.
Well, maybe, but that gets that's subject to the state stomping on them. Okay, so but you can't argue with the loss ratios. I mean, it is what it is,
well,
right?
Or explain to me this. Last year, maybe it was the year before, when the COVID first started, they had a good year because nobody was driving, so there's nobody wrecking their car. But then the last year, I seem to recall, Carol, and you have a better memory of this than me, virtually every major auto insurance company posted losses in the billions of dollars. And yet, if you watch any TV show, any show of prime time, even they're not so much on during the day, but CNBC or Fox, they spent a fortune in advertising. I couldn't get that connection. I mean, you got Mahomes, you got the coach, you got who else on State Farm? You got Jake from State Farm. You got the who's doing the stuff from Allstate's got the guy, the wrecking guy. And I mean, these people are making these commercials. Not only are a fortune to make, but they're all over the place. It's like we're losing money on every person we insure. We want twice as many people. What are they doing? I mean, it seemed odd to me.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's you know, there's all sorts of crazy stuff with that. But what I look at from a standpoint of the you know, the general market tenor today is that there is a tremendous disconnect. And I understand where it came from, because for the last 20 years, close to, all right, it's certainly the last 15, all right, going back to the 08 crash, every single hiccup has led to immediate response by the government, the Federal Reserve, both.
Right.
All right. And you know, I mean, when COVID comes around, oh my God, it's the worst. You know, it's the worst thing in the world. By the way, truth was that if you were young and not morbid, the risk of it whacking you was less than you getting in a car going to the grocery store. All right. Now, were there people for which it was high risk? Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and a bunch of them got killed too, right? But those are the facts. But no. We have to shut down every grocery store, every fast food place, every bar, every restaurant. And oh, by the way, who's working in those places and is taking the exposure risk? Generally younger people who are not morbid. And therefore, yeah, you're going to get it. Okay.
Which, and you probably get it anyway. Eventually, you end up getting it anyway.
Well, the point is you couldn't, you know, and then we had this entire, this complete load of BS, which is that we could actually prevent people from getting this, not defer it, which there was never any scientific evidence for. And in fact, we knew that that was absolute nonsense, because even isolated islands that had no outside connection during the pandemic in 1918 eventually ended up having it ripped through them anyway. And exactly how it got into there, nobody really knows. The assumption is maybe, you know, a bird brought it over or something, right? Because these were islands that did no external trade with anybody.
Well, there was an article early on, Carol, I mean, in the thing, because you were on, and it was a Notre Dame doctor. And he was talking about, you know, there's an older couple. And they weren't, you know, they weren't 90, but they were in their 60s. And they said, you know what, looks to me like we're going to get this anyway. Why don't we just get it, and if we survive, at least we can see our grandkids for the next 3 years, or else stay in a house for 3 years, not see them, get it, and kill and die then. What's the difference?
And die anyway, right. Yeah,
you know, I mean, there's a lot of...
Well, some of the things that were done, I mean, look... People need to go to prison for some of this stuff, all right? The idea that you could tell someone's spouse that they could not be in the hospital room with them.
Oh, I know.
That I mean, while the guy's literally choking to death.
I don't. I mean, this that whole that that, that whole stuff, that whole mess.
But you know what? And then the other thing is, but it underlines something that we've been doing for a very long time. Okay, and now we have, oh, these articles. It was just on CNN, and it was on Fox, and it's, you know, it's everywhere. Is that we now we have all this, all these diseases that normally only get old people. Oh boy, we have accelerated aging from an unknown cause, and Well, guess what, guys? It's not an unknown cause.
Maybe it's cell phones.
Well, I don't think so, you know, but it didn't just all, you know, a lot of people are saying it's all the shots. Well, no, some of it is clearly the shots because there's an inflection in the data. It is very clearly visible. It's in the disability tables, which they can't do anything to try to poison because guess what? Those are run by someone other than the CDC, right? But it's also in the CDC's own data sets, the disability claims, and certain different causes of death in the UCODs, which show up in their coding. And so it's there. They're trying to hide it. Things are being reclassified and claimed as not what they really are. But listen, dead is dead, and you can't argue with dead is dead, right? So, you know, here it is. We should have had a huge decrease in the death rate among older people simply because you can only die once. And so once you do, until that bucket gets refilled with people as they get older, the death rate is supposed to go down. Well, that didn't happen. So we know that's there. But one of the insidious things about this is that we have known for a long time that the medical industry doesn't want to see things actually fixed. They want to make money.
Oh, sure.
Okay. I mean, it's a business like any other business.
Well, the best easy, if it ever would have worked, the best drug in terms of money that could ever have been imagined was Rogaine.
Yeah.
Because the idea was, if you are follically challenged, means if you're bald, you had to use this, every day for the rest of your life. And it wasn't all that expensive, but it was, you know, it's like me wearing contact lenses. I got to use contact lens solution every day for the rest of my life or until I stop wearing them, right? I
mean, right.
So even if it was $2 a day, it's an annuity. It's the best thing on earth. Nobody wants to sell somebody something for $300. You take one pill and you're not bald anymore.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But see, the thing is that we have so much going on and so much corruption in this area. I mean, just as an example, diabetes is it actually translates to the mother of all diseases. Okay, that's not a lie. I didn't come up with that. That's what it actually is. Well, that's real. Okay. What do we do here? We claim that people that have higher cholesterol, they need to take a statin. You need to get that cholesterol down. Okay. Problem with that is the body makes cholesterol in the liver. It doesn't come from what you eat. Your body makes it. So why is your body making more of what is used to repair inflammation? If you stick yourself with a thorn or, you know, whatever, why is your body making more of that? Well, the body's making more of that because it thinks it has to fix something, right? I mean, that's right. What's going on. All right. We could detect the incipience of this before it starts with fasting insulin tests trivially. We don't do them on a routine basis. Instead, we look at your A1C, we look at your glucose. Guess what? Those go out of range after the damage has already become critical and is actually making you physically ill. But we could detect this way before that. Why don't we do it? Because it would point out a bunch of things. Number one, if you take a statin, your fasting insulin level is going to be adversely affected. In other words, if I give you a statin and you weren't taking one before and you start taking one, I can virtually guarantee
that is the be-all to end-all of drugs these days, the statins.
I understand, but and there's billions of dollars, even though most of them are off patent nowadays, okay? Still billions of dollars being made every year. I can virtually guarantee that your fasting insulin level will go up. That is scientifically known to be bad.
Well, we run through various of these situations, like not weekly because we talk about other stuff a lot too, but let's sort of combine it together, Carl, because we have an election cycle.
Chief, let me just finish one element of this.
But I'm saying I understand where you're going with it, but how do you stop it?
But wait a minute, take the drug element out of it, okay? You know, you go to the doctor, he tells you, you know, eat this stat, right? Take that out of it. Go into the supposedly healthy area of your grocery store, all right, where they sell, oh, let's say, granola bars, right, which are supposed to be good for you. Absolutely, right? I mean, this is what everybody is told and believes. Okay, pick it up and look at it. It's got soy in it, and it's got seed oils in it. Both of those are highly inflammatory. You want to know why you have artery disease? Right there. All right. Now, why are those things used? Because they're 10 cents cheaper and they're shelf stable, which means that things can be put in a package and on a shelf and don't need refrigeration. You know what else? You know what's even worse is that it's almost impossible to go out to eat and not end up ingesting those things because restaurants use things like Whirl, which is a synthetic butter substitute. Tastes great, and it's full of that stuff.
Well, how many people did we put in the grave in the 50s with margarine?
A bunch.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You know, so, you, and by the way, in the restaurant, they don't, unlike on the label on the box of granola that you can actually read it and say, hey, wait a minute, I want to eat that crap. In the restaurant, they don't have to disclose this.
Well, it took
and
me...
Yet,
I
don't care where you go, Chief. You're going to get exposed to that stuff if you eat out.
I'm gonna,
what do we do? What do we do these days? Nobody cooks anymore, right?
Well, I try to, but...
Well, I do too, but I'm saying most people, right?
Right, but I mean, if you... I like to barbecue, and...
yeah, so do I.
I've gone through... I can name you maybe two brands that use sugar, regular sugar, than high fructose corn syrup. Everybody else uses high fructose, and I don't want to eat that. So, I'll sometimes spend, you know, 10 minutes reading all the ingredients of the barbecue sauce, and I've finally found a couple of brands.
There's a couple that don't have it in it. Yes, yeah. Correct. And you know what? I do the same thing, and the ones that I use, well, guess what? They got molasses in them. Okay, well that's you know, I mean, it's still sugar, but it's not high fructose corn syrup.
Right. So, Kyle, how do you, I mean, in the fractured area we are politically. I don't. We've talked about, you know, well, we had a big thing last 2 weeks ago regarding the diabetes fatso drug, overweight drug. Sorry,
The Ozempic thing. Yeah,
it costs somewhere in this mess. I don't see either one of our two presidential candidates who are both sniffing for money so bad that they look like rabid dogs. There's no chance of them coming out right now and saying, oh, by the way, we're changing patent laws, we're changing other stuff. Nobody's charging anybody $1,000 for something that costs them $2 to make on my watch. Nobody will ever say that. And yet, that's sort of what is needed. Is it the best, you know, government money can make? When you get to kind of the solutions, you know, you can, I mean, somewhere along the line, you curse the darkness enough, somebody's got to flip the switch, right? And
well, Chief, as long as intentionally maiming people is profitable and nobody goes to prison for it, and by the way, since the government is the only one that can bring criminal charges, okay, because, you know, you're just talking about OJ, right?
Yeah.
The government's the only one that can charge you with a crime. I can't do it. If you hit my car, I can't charge you with driving drunk. I can sue you to try to get the money for the property you destroyed, but I can't put you in jail.
No.
for the conduct that you engaged in willingly that led to the damage. Only the government can do that. And if the government refuses, the only way you're going to change that, and by the way, they do refuse. All right?
Well, sure.
I mean, there was just a study out from Mayo, for crying out loud. You want to talk about, you know, I mean, it doesn't get much more credible than that in the medical world, that essentially all these lies we've been told about giving kids puberty blockers because they're allegedly trans and it's reversible and if you stop it, everything, they knew that was BS. They never bothered to look at it. They never tested it. These drugs were never used for that before. Finally, these guys went and they ran some actual tests on the testes of boys who were given this stuff precocial, you know, before puberty, right, and blocked. They found every single one of them had damage to the testes, and in most cases, it looks like it's permanent.
Oh, that would not be good. On that note, S&P Futures down 19. NASDAQ Futures now 91. You're causing me to shudder just sitting here. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 20 and NASDAQ Futures down 98. We're leaking again here because I think a lot of that has to do with oil's creeping back up, and that's causing a lot of the problems. Dow's down 98. The big mover in the Dow is JP Morgan, which came out with pretty good earnings, but they're down $5. That's only 2.5%. The stock's 190, but still, it's down on pretty good earnings. I hope that's not the way this whole earnings season is going to go, but time will tell on that. Over in Europe, bullish, but not as bullish. Maybe down a little bit from the last time we did this. DAX up 149.8%. The FTSE up 118. That's 1.5%. That's a big move there. CAC around up 60.75%. The UK shows sign of recession rebound, they say. Well, we'll see about that. Nikkei up 80.2%. Hang Seng down 373, 2%, over 2%. China exports fell more than expected. Shanghai is only down 15, though. It's 0.5%, 3,019, still above 3,000. Yesterday, Dow was down 2, but the S&P was up 38, and NASDAQ was up 271. So all the seven big sevens were all up big yesterday. Bonds, down 5 basis points, 4.53, but still over 4.5. Bund down 11 basis points, 2.36. That's a pretty big move. Japan unchanged, but 0.85. High for them, high for recently for them anyway. Oil up $1.37, creep, 86.39. Brent 117, 90.91. Natural gas unchanged, 175. RBOB up another 3 cents, 283. Gold up another $40, 24.12 above 2400. Silver up 94 cents, 29.19. Copper up 9 cents, 434. Copper finally joining the party here. Took forever to get over $4. Now it's creeping pretty regularly as well. Dollar stronger. Euro down to 106. And the British pound down to 124, so the dollar has been stronger across the board. We have Bitcoin up 458, 70,804 was under 70,000 2 days ago, but now above it. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, everyone. It is 7:34 here in Chicago. We have 50 degrees right now, some rain and wind this morning, partly sunny later with a high of 59. Phoenix, 67 right now, mostly sunny later with a 93 high. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 31 minutes. Eden's is 53 minutes from Lake Cook. Eisenhower, 35 minutes from Wolf. And 29 minutes, the Ryan from 95th. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 31 minutes. NBA, Bulls win. They beat the Pistons in Detroit. That was 127-105. Hawks and Predators tonight. That's at the UC. And Coyotes and Oilers at 8 o'clock. In golf, Masters was delayed yesterday. They're going to start pretty soon, round two here, and the people who didn't finish due to darkness yesterday will start, or they already started. So, right now, DeChambeau leads with a 65, Scheffler's negative 6, and Hogarth's negative 5. That's all I got, Chief.
Back the three dudes that did the ceremonial first drive, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, who's 88, and Tom Watson, who's the kid there. I think he's only 74. I think Nicklaus is 84.
I got some other sports news if you want it, too.
Sure.
Mizuhara, the translator for Ohtani, wagered more than $180 million on sports, placing dozens of bets over more than a two-year period. He fell more than $40 million in debt to an illegal bookmaker. He wasn't the bookmaker wasn't named, but it was previously reported to be Matthew Boyer, and stole more than $16 million from Ohtani while hiding the bank transactions from the baseball player.
All right, so that still leaves 24.
So,
well, 40 under was his low point or something?
Yeah, 40 million in debt to the bookmaker, and then I guess the complaint, or Ohtani is saying he stole $16 million. So, that got a lot bigger a lot faster.
I got to ask two things. One of my quick Masters story, the three guys and Nicholas said, you know you're getting old when the hardest part of hitting a drive is putting the tee in the ground. Well, what a fantastic, those guys were really something. But Carl, this I mean, a lot of stuff that you talk about really, and what we try and talk about on the show is we try and attach some sort of common sense to the world that's happening, and we try and connect things that maybe don't seem connectable, but really are, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly. And the thing is, you know, Google forced me to hive off everything that I post that's health related into a no advertising area because their AdSense program threatened to cancel me if I didn't do that. If I displayed any advertising against any of these articles, any at all, they were going to ban me permanently. Well, now wait a minute. Who laid that pressure on them? And we're not talking about just the COVID stuff. They went back when COVID started. They went back through their crawler, went back through my articles that were more than 10 years old on the 60 plus pounds I lost by changing what I ate. No drugs, no pharmaceutical interventions at all. And they flagged all those as medical misinformation.
How could
even though these were factual, I mean, factually able to be backed up, not only with the scale, but with Garmin data that tracks, you know, because I've worn one for a long time because I'm a runner, right? All the way back to when I did this, that tracked every single calorie that I burned through exercise.
Well, how about 5 years ago, you're buying pants at 44, then 4 years ago they're 42, and you're down to 38. Isn't that proof?
Well, guess what? When I was buying 36s and now I wear a 30, 32.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, oh, by the way, my suit size, I had to throw out all my, well, I gave them all the Goodwill, but I had to get rid of all of my nice expensive suits because the jackets don't fit anymore. And I went from an XL in a t-shirt or a sweatshirt to a medium.
So, you know, if I were to do something like that, I got plenty of them waiting in my closet.
Well, I'm just, you know, I mean,
to drop down a little.
Well, I had a blazer that I still had. I don't know why I'd kept it, that I wore when I was in high school, and I was able to wear it again.
Well, when I was on the trading floor and used to be in terrific shape, and I was okay looking, I had a gorgeous, a Hugo Boss tuxedo and a 42 extra long. I still got it. I don't think it'd fit, though. Just saying. So we need a 42 extra long. I got one for you.
Well, I mean, it's just one of the things that, you know, that amazes me, though, is that people, you know, people are like, oh, you know, this is, you know, you don't have a medical degree. Okay, fine. Maybe I don't. But what I do understand is finance, because I ran a company. And I do understand captive audiences and creating subscription systems that are essentially forced purchases.
Well, you create your own demand.
Well, that's exactly it. And by the way, if you can do it in a way that the person can't tell you to go to hell,
well,
then that's
better. There's a huge difference between, and let's connect the dots here for a second. There's a huge difference between golf and your health. If I can find a golf ball that goes 10 yards further for the average person, guess what? I just created the demand for that thing because there's a gazillion guys out there that are pissed off that they can't get over this one sand trap on their favorite par 5, and all of a sudden now they can. I mean, so you've created, I mean, there's no chance that guy's ever going to buy another golf ball for the rest of his life other than your golf ball. But now when you start giving people health stuff and then charging them a fortune, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't, maybe it has side effects, and maybe you don't tell people all about them, or you don't monitor people very well, because I've been very thankful to have a pretty, very healthy life. But I'll tell you what, every time they've given me any kind of drug, I've had a side effect. Now, part of it must just be my genetics Other people say that it doesn't bother them at all. But I don't, if I have an aspirin, I feel different. I mean, it's just,
right.
So you can't tell me that this is all good for everybody, because nothing's all good for everybody. It just,
well, here's the biggest problem I have with all this. We are so arrogant that we believe. I mean, we do not understand how the human immune system actually works. Okay, this thing that just showed up with the puberty blockers in boys, it was, you know, from the Mayo. It's preprint, so it hasn't been peer reviewed yet, but it's published. The thing that shocks me about this is that we claim we understand what the effects of these things are, but it's never been looked at.
No, and how do you know what a 5-year effect's going to be if you're 2 days into it?
Well, exactly. All right, same thing with these vaccines that came out during COVID. We know these things are safe. Wait a minute. You don't know what's going to happen 5 years from
now. They're safe if you're 85 in a nursing home, because
You're going to be dead in 2 years anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So I mean, let's pull this back to like a market sort of thing. And I'm not.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
No.
I'm
trying to tie this all into the market.
I know.
Okay. And here's the thing: we put 50,000 to 60,000 people a month to work, supposedly in healthcare. And fewer than 10% of those people are doctors and nurses who actually, you know, give you some care, right?
The overhead rate, in my terms, is off the chart. It's like education.
It's utterly ridiculous. We do the same thing in education, all right? And all of it is because we have the thumb on the scale coming out of Washington, D.C. and out of the states, all right? And in the medical side, it's on both sides, because you have Medicaid, which is partially state-funded. And all of that is there. You then have a body of law that says that everything that these organizations are doing is a felony. It's a criminal felony. You're supposed to get 10 years in the can for it. And nobody ever gets indicted or goes to jail.
You also have a situation where, and I'm going to go out on a limb here. Now, if somebody's paying for it, I know what people are going to do, and I'd probably do the same thing. Nobody should have to use their insurance to pay for their teeth cleaning. Those pieces of paper going back and forth do nothing but add to the system and do nothing for anybody.
All
they do is add cost. Now, the idea for me to pay $200 to somebody to pay the dentist $200 is insane, where if I just pay to myself, the cost would probably be $150.
Or $100.
Same way with like your yearly
physical. By the way, because it wasn't one guy that you paid, there were five other people in the office. Right.
But I would love to, because we could talk more about this other stuff on too. This stuff's not going away. But what I'm seeing, when I ask you, because you have amazing market feel too, you could basically rag about the market and how high it was for the last, you know, however many years. I mean, you could do that in the dot-com era. You could do it, you know, 2007. And if you wanted to, you could look at PE ratios right now and say they're on, you know, your opinion might be that they're unsustainable, but you might get some growth in there. It still doesn't mean that the stock is too high or too low today. I mean, it's very difficult to make that call. But, Kyle, I've been around a while. There is no question that in the last 6 months to a year, there is a tone change in these interest rates and these gold prices. Anybody who thinks that the market right now is the same as it was 18 months ago is clearly not looking at it with any kind of glasses on. I mean, maybe rose-colored. I don't know what it means yet.
I do.
Well, I mean, I think, we're going to get to your opinion in a second, but I'm a guy here that has managing money for people, and we have an awful lot of people that we have now. We are protected, and by the way, a lot of people have 20-25%, thanks to Dan helping me out with this, a little bit, Dan Janitas, where every Monday, my brother, president of PTI, goes to the auction and gets people T-bills, and we have people that have, you know, some percentage in cash, which you wouldn't have done three. I mean, it's not 100%, or no, I wouldn't want that. But, I mean, at some point here, we're on the trail now, the 10 years down today a little bit, but it's just tucked under 4.5. But we're along the trail here if we're starting to go to 5 to 6 to 7. I'm not going to say that's going to happen. Where do I call my people up and say, you know what, I know you love these stocks, but we either got to get a lot tighter on our puts, Or we need to off some of these things, because this can't go. I mean,
let me tell you where the problem is that I see, and I see it starting now. Okay, and this was a warning that we got in 2008 as well. go ask your people that have a built-in way to get this without having to pay for it and without having it whack on their score. If you have a Discover card, you can get your FICO every month for free. Okay, because it's part of they run it because they want to know.
I love that card because they check the they check the dark web for me too.
Right, and that's all part of, well, and you know why they do it. They don't do it to benefit you. They do it to benefit them.
Okay, but right? Okay, I'd still like to know if I'm there. I mean,
I understand that. I mean, they're but they're not being altruistic about this. They're trying to kill the fraud that that otherwise would whack them because if something gets charged on your card, you didn't pay for it. Guess who eats it? They do.
Oh yeah, I get it.
Right. So I mean, this is not altruism by any stretch of the imagination, and they're pulling the credit scores because they want to know whether or not risk profiles have changed, and they ought to be paying attention to that, right? In 08, I have I have essentially no need for credit. I have no long term debt of any kind. I use cards as a revolving.
Yeah, except
way
you can't rent anything, a car, without having a credit card.
Well, I understand, but yeah. I use them as a cash management tool, basically, right? I mean, I don't have to carry around $500 in my my wallet. I could I just put it on the card, and at the end of the month, I pay it off. Okay, fine. My patterns have not changed in terms of utilization and stuff like that in an extraordinary long time. In 08. All of a sudden, out of the middle of nowhere, about 20 points comes off my FICO. Now, this has no bearing at all on how someone would rate me in terms of, an insurance risk or whatever have you, because I'm so far up in the stratosphere, it doesn't make any difference. However, for somebody that has a 650, this is the difference between getting a loan and not.
Oh, without a doubt. If you're not 6, you can't rent any place now for under 650.
I'm saying, this is the kind of thing that screws people that are a little more challenged in that regard, right, and actually need access to credit in order to keep their head above water and not be sucking on it and drowning. Well, it's starting again. I'm just starting to see it now. And this happened in the spring of 08, and it was about 3 months before everything went down the toilet. And I'm seeing it right now, Chief.
Well, I think... One of my,
I'm just saying, I would be, if you think those guys don't have their fingers on the pulse of how tight this all is,
I would agree.
Average Joe, yes, they do.
Anecdotally, one of a good pal and one of our biggest clients, or best clients, I'd say biggest, he does a lot of stuff. He gets around. He does commercial real estate and everything. He calls me yesterday and he goes, I just had lunch with a guy who grabs the car if you're not paying, repossesses the repossessor.
Right, the repo guy. Yeah.
Says they've never been busier and they're going out like this week to buy a new tow truck.
Oh yeah, well,
you got to be kidding me. And he asked me, I didn't know the answer to this, Carl. So that's one of the things I list here, list to ask Carl. I mean, we actually had a question years ago. Somebody tweeted in or whatever. I said, Chief, how come there's a list price on cars? And you always get the car for less than the list price. And I was kind of surprised that people didn't think this through or weren't there when this was happening, but it doesn't matter. No, there's no such thing as a bad question. And I said, well, the difference is if a car is list for 40 and the average price walking out the door is 35, that essentially gives you $5,000 to play with. So if somebody comes in with a jalopy and they've got $7,000 owed on it and the cash value, your trade-in value is 5, you can just nudge the other one up to 37. Nobody cares, whether it's because it's a discount anyway, or allegedly, right? So they just write the thing up, and bingo, you go out the front door, and your old debt's gone, and you got the new debt. It's just, right. It's $5 a month more or $10 a month more than it would have been otherwise, and nobody cares. But he says to me, what happens to these people who were paying like $20,000 over list during COVID? And now that thing comes in, and now those things are 3 years old, and some people like to get new cars every 3 years, and you're $30,000 or $25,000 under. I said, I didn't even think of that. I better ask Carl. There's no way you're nudging that up a couple grand on the new one. What are you doing? You can't turn it in. You got to give somebody a $25,000. I never even thought of it, Carl. What are you doing with that one?
Well, there's that and the other serious. A hole in the wallet that's going to start hitting people is all these EVs that people have bought and have thought are so great, you know, for the environment, or maybe they just like them, or, you know, whatever have you. Those battery packs are insanely expensive, right? Like $15,000 expensive. And if you have one fail, the car's scrap without it.
Well, what's the, how big of a hit is Hertz taking on their battery cars are trying to sell?
Oh, they, their CEO got fired over it.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot that.
Yeah, their CEO got fired over making that bet because, as it turns out, not only did is there, you know, range problems that, you know, their customers have and things like this, but on top of that, the maintenance and operating expenses that were supposed to be so much lower were actually materially higher, and the collision repair expenses were astronomically higher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so as a result, all of a sudden, these guys, you know, are you know, they're wondering where the Vaseline is. And so, yeah, and now they're disposing of those things in their fleet because they can't make any money on them.
And now, what's so, that industry... Is it still like, this is a 20-year-old story. Some guy leaves the...
Think about that, though, Chief. Yo, this is a company that ought to have its finger on the pulse of the operating cost of a vehicle, right? I mean, that's what they do, is rent them for short term. And you want to talk about getting it wrong. They didn't just get it wrong. It hammered them.
Well, I was going to tell a little story as a way to explain what I think you're trying to talk about. That industry is not what you think. You think it's you make money by renting cars, which, right. Duh, you sort of do. But some guy, this is a long time ago, he's kind of a goofball on the trading floor, but of course I meet him at some party, we have this long conversation, and he's in the used car business. And there was at the time, they were probably all dead, a big used car place on the north side, rental car place on the north side of Chicago. But the guy also had a dealer license, a primary dealer license, so he was able to buy them right from like Ford. And he said they went there, and Ford had just come out with his new car. I don't know what it was. I mean, the name was something you'd be familiar with. It was a midsize, and the thing wasn't selling so much. And nobody could figure out why, because it was... Anyway, they said they were able to buy like 60 of them from Ford at a deep discount. And all of a sudden, the cars, once they got in the rental fleet, people loved them. And they ended up going up to being like... And he said they actually... He said anybody can rent cars. And if you're keeping up with the rental versus the depreciation versus the people at the desk and everything, you're sort of doing okay. The trick is you have to buy cars that you don't lose much money on in a year or two you have them. They were able to sell these for more than they paid for them after renting them for a year.
Right, and the problem here is that these are what's happened in the used market with things like Teslas. They can't give them away.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you budget... You're going to pay 50 grand for a Tesla, rent it for 2 years at a premium rate, and sell it for 40. And all of a sudden, you're selling it for 25. You're screwed.
Yeah, you're dead.
Yeah.
Right. And that's exactly... Well, I mean, you look at what's happened to Rivian.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they're, you know, they've gotten destroyed. By the way, you want to talk about something that's really funny. All right. Have you taken a look at the chart of DJT?
I look at it every day, but I don't really want to look at it, but I do. Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, wasn't that Orange Jesus? That was Orange Jesus, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's his thing, right? And that was one of those SPACs that was going to be the savior of the world. All these shell companies that then, you know, buy some existing private thing, and that's, you know, that's the shortcut to take them public without having to do the roadshow and, you know, and the pink sheet, you know, the red herring and all that nonsense, right? And this was the shortcut around all the regulatory things that historically have gotten in the way. I mean, when I ran MCS, we couldn't do that. We looked at the idea of going public. You had to go through the whole roadshow. You had to have all the financials. You had to do the red herring. You had to do all this and that and the other thing. I mean, you know, the whole syndication bit and all that. And at any point during that, something could go wrong, and you end up with a really big problem because you spent all that money and you get nothing out of it.
Right? Well, you always could if you had a friendly bank or somebody, especially a mid-sized bank and you're a mid-sized company. You always could have them looking out for a smaller company that, for whatever reason, the people got old or whatever. It may actually have a listing that you could buy that company for.
Yeah, there was always that kind of a way to do things, right? But it wasn't like a syndicated, you know, path to riches, right? And then all of a sudden, the SPAC thing shows up, and they start doing this. Well, Okay, so all of the normal diligence that would go into something like Truth Social and where this would normally go, that all gets short-circuited because, you know, the SPAC just buys it. And oh, gee, all of a sudden it's a public firm, and by the way, we'll change the symbol to DJT because it's Trump. Okay,
and you give the guy who doesn't do anything for the place almost, actually, you give him a contract like if he's the executor running the place.
Right, so here's the amusing part of it, though. If you look at this before all that crazy, you know, when it happened, when the original announcement was made, this company went from being, you know, basically a nothing, but we all knew what it was going to be. It was, you know, it was about $18 a share. Then the hype machine gets going, and it ends up at about 30, which is, you know, that's pretty close to a double. That's not bad, right?
Actually, the first couple of days, it went from.
It goes there, and it trades it high ticks at $79.38, and right now, it's quoted at $32.41.
Because I got the highest close here at like 66, so it actually ticked higher that day and closed at 66. Wow!
I'm looking at a 4-hour chart, so you know that includes all the interday stuff. 79.38.
Well, because I got the highest close on 3/27 at 66.22.
That was the close.
Yeah, and you're saying it traded 79 that day? Wow!
It traded 79.38 in the morning, basically first thing in the morning, and that was, you know, back on 3/25. Yeah.
Ouch.
And so, you know, yeah, so if you bought, and of course, you know, for every seller, there's a buyer, right?
Right.
So somebody's sitting on a whole bunch of that stock at $79, and today it's trading $32.41.
You know, it's funny when you mention that, Carl, and this is, I know our listeners, it was by way below their pay grade, but when I used to do seminars, we used to do a lot of them here at PTI, we still have, you know, all the stuff to do it with, but people don't necessarily want to come in and learn as much as they used to. I don't, it's just kind of a shout out or whatever, but. People would come in and they would talk about, you know, they did their research, they've got their newsletter writer, they got their stuff, and they're going to go buy Carl Inc. And I'd say something like, by the way, who do you think you're buying it from?
Right.
Really simple question. You guys, well, I'm buying it in the market. I'd probably call Schwab and, you know, whatever.
Somebody sold it to you.
And I said, no, you know, that's not really, there is somebody on the other end of that 1,000-share deal, somebody that sold you whatever it is, Carl Inc. at $100, and you bought it, and it's a screaming buy, yet you bought it from somebody. And still, they don't really get what you're talking about. And I said, what makes you think that somebody isn't smarter than you that day?
Right, exactly.
If you're on a trading floor and you make a market, if you say, okay, I'm a quarter bid at 3/8, and five people come in and start buying it at 3/8, you immediately assume they know more than you do when you move your market. You don't sit there and say, oh, no, I got this figured out. That's one way to the grave. I mean, real quick, you can't. You have to assume that the other guy knows something, too. And yet nobody does.
Yeah. Well, guess what? He didn't sell it to you because he thought it was going higher.
Right. Unless he croaked or something. What makes you think he's... The look on people's faces, they go, well, how could he be right? I'm right. Like, okay,
well, I'll tell you what I most of what I have at this point is sitting in short-term treasuries, either directly through, you know, through Treasury Direct or through, I mean, all the major brokerages have a government treasury only money market fund that you can buy. And yeah, they take an expense ratio out of it, so you know you get somewhere between 20 and 40 basis points worth of whack on that, depending on how much money you got to throw around.
Would you be better off us going to the auction for you on a Monday morning and just buying you the damn thing?
Well, I can do that through TD.
I know, but you know,
okay. But I'm saying, well, sure, you could take that if you're willing to do the work and do the rollovers and such. You could take that 20 or 30 basis points and you can keep it because that's what you're paying them for, is to do that, right?
No question.
Well, nobody works for free, so you know that's fine. But the thing is that I can sit there and get 5%, and if the Treasury can't pay me, I don't need money anymore. I need, you know, it's time to go start being barbecue and, you know, and cooking people, because that's where we are as a society. So I'm not worried about that. You know, there is no counterparty risk in that. And people say there is. They're full of it. There's no counterparty risk there. So the thing is that with what we have showing up in the CPI and these other areas, I know I'm going to wake up in the morning and you know, if I've got $500,000 sitting in SNOX, which is Schwab's government-only money market fund, if I've got $500,000 sitting there in that, I know I'm going to get the coupon, whatever the, you know, the yield is. That check's going to show up in my account every month on time. And I also know that the $500,000 is still going to be there. All right. And I am not going to wake up and find the futures lock limit down. And if they are, I don't care.
Well, you, in some ways, even though other people are losing dough and maybe you aren't some of your stocks, we got a dash here. In some ways, you can get out of a T-bill instantly and buy something.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, the better ones of these funds have 99% plus daily liquidity. So if you want the funds, you're not going to have a gate come down and slam you.
Yeah, we've been picking the one we wanted, the 3 month, the 2 month, the 6 month.
Well, yeah, you do it through Treasury Direct. It's, I mean, anybody can do that. I have a Treasury Direct account.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, we're a couple $1 million a Monday usually here.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, it's if you're willing to do the work on your own, or if you do it through someone like you guys, it's really easy to be in there if that's where you want to be, and it's all risk adjusted return. Might I miss a 20% run in the market by, you know, by having most of my cash there? Yeah, I might. But you know what? I'm not going to get a 50% loss.
Well, that's right. Carl, take care of yourself. Enjoy yourself on the weekend. It's supposed to be really nice weather here. Hopefully it is by you.
It is. It's absolutely gorgeous.
And we will talk on Tuesday. S&P Futures down 46 now. NASDAQ is down 191. Something just turned here. Nobody likes what's going on right now. We'll talk about it on Monday. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.